From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 409, Lessons from a Pen Tester, with guest Paula Janowski, recorded Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Paula Janowski, and she's an IT security auditor and penetration tester, as well as an enterprise security MVP and a trainer for Microsoft in the security space. Welcome back, Paula. I normally don't do this format. We're together at TechEd or something.
Yeah. Hi, Richard. Very nice of you. Thanks for inviting me to the radio. And hello, everyone. I'm really happy that you are with us, and I hope that you're gonna spend this time with us too.
we'll have some good fun. Well, and you and I have known each other a disturbingly long time now. All these different events and things. Normally at TechEd. Of course, there's no TechEd anymore. There's just Ignite.
Yeah, of course. There is an Ignite, and then it's going to be in Chicago at the beginning of May. And hopefully it's going to be nice. And I've heard it's going to be huge because there's going to be 20,000 people inside.
Are we actually going to get 20,000 people out? And what is that going to look like?
Exactly.
I remember taking photographs of like breakfast with 10,000 people in Orlando. And now to have it at 20,000, that'd be astonishing.
20. Yeah, I mean, whole world is going to come over there since there is no like conference like this going on in Europe.
No.
So basically everyone's going to go to Chicago, and that's supposed to be crazy.
Yeah, well, it's a good hub, not hard to get to, so I guess we'll see. I haven't got a commitment yet from Microsoft to do speaker idle at Ignite yet, but I'm hoping they will. They didn't say no, they're just trying to figure it out. But okay. I know they're honoring Aidan Finn's win at the last TechEd in the U.S., to have him, so he's definitely going to be speaking at Ignite. And you're there as well. Are you going to do the usual sessions?
Yes, definitely. So that sounds like things are still like they are making decisions or which sessions should we pick and so on. For sure, I'm doing the pre-con. I know it already. So that's going to be pretty nice. It's just a one day though. It's before the conference, of course. And then last year I made one mistake, which I was kind of laughing at because I had four sessions. And I think it's a little bit too much.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Four sessions is a lot.
It's a lot. And it really makes you like wasted at the end of the whole week. And it's a lot of preparations and it's a lot of stress. So four sessions was like kind of border for me. But as long as, I mean, I already lived that. Mm-hmm. So this year I'm like, maybe four sessions.
Well, and you don't get to go to any of the show. You're always prepping your sessions.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I wasn't attending any kind of parties, any kind of meetings like that.
No.
Nothing really. Yeah, I was just like preparing for the sessions. Yeah.
I've done workshops at TechEd back in the day, and they were the best because you were done first. Then you had the rest of the conference free. You worked the whole day on a one-day workshop, and then you were done.
Which is a very comfortable thing. Yeah.
Yeah, really good place to be. So what sort of work are you doing these days? I know you're hither and yon. Is it still mostly pen testing?
Yes, definitely. Actually, this year and last year we've noticed the kind of like ingrowing trend for penetration tests. And we had a lot of different kind of inquiries from different kind of customers to deliver the penetration tests. And what we have noticed, and we could sum up 2014 this way, is that security, it's a very like booming subject. And everyone wants to feel safe and everyone wants to do the check if the infrastructure is fine, if there is like no mistakes made and so on. So we have noticed that based on the project amount. And technically 2014 from the security perspective for our company was the best and the worst year at the same time. And we are laughing a little bit is that the worst thing that can happen to you is when all of the projects get confirmed.
Yes, of course. Well, and I guess the Sony hack has got to have affected all this, that more companies are just thinking in terms of, we need to make sure that this doesn't happen to us.
Yeah, definitely. So, that already made a couple of things in security. People started to like open their eyes that things like that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you a funny example that I'm observing right now is that we do have like the standard informational info at our company email. And today we have received 5 inquiries for the project.
5 today.
Yes.
How many of you are there?
8. It's just 8 of us. And technically, when I got that, I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. People are really afraid.
Yeah, they are afraid. And they are like asking questions. Do you do this? Do you do this? Can we do this with you? Can we do that?
Right.
And I mean, it has never been like that. Usually, like, when you arrange the projects, that it's like a discussion with the customer, and we need to conclude that, of course, penetration test is something very important.
Yep.
But right now, like, people actually come to us because they know already that this is important. This is not to be explained.
No.
So it's a kind of funny time.
So nobody's asking questions anymore. They're just, how soon can you get here?
Exactly. It's a little bit like that.
And is that what they're asking for? It's just penetration testing?
Yes, it's a penetration testing. Okay. Exactly. For the external network.
So what can I do if I'm not prepared to have Paula on site yet? What can I do to sort of make myself more secure? There's some obvious checks. What's your immediate checklist of things you can do to break into a system?
Well, like a very basic, starting from the very basic things, from the like an insight perspective, there is a lot of different kinds of tools that are automating this kind of checks.
Right.
But it would be great if, first of all, you had all your systems up to date, because right now, like, and especially in 2014, there were so many like very dangerous vulnerabilities that are quite easy to exploit. And when they are exploited, for example, they make you local system out of the user account.
Right.
Like that. So one of that should be definitely one of the steps.
Patch first.
Patch first, yes. Yeah. And even though like everybody says this, yes, it's like, yeah, everybody says this, but you know, when you look at their own infrastructure, it's, well, maybe this, that one tiny patch missing somewhere and so on. And usually this one tiny patch can, of course, make a difference. So this is like the first thing. Second thing, of course, is to find out how to mitigate, I would say, one of the most popular attacks right now, which is the PASTI hash. And Microsoft said that they are mitigating this in Windows 10. Well, not fully really, but in some parts, yes.
So what is this hack?
PASTI hash. This is how it's called.
Okay. And what did they do? Like, what's the hack?
Yeah. So technically, what can you do is that, you take the hash, you have to steal it somehow. So this kind of attack assumes that hacker managed to get to someone's computer. And of course, to be able to get the hash, you either is going to use the vulnerability, or you can use, some other method to become a local administrator.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way how you can obviously steal the hash. And as long as you get the hash, then you can use the hash to authenticate within other systems, within the domain, of course. But in most cases, one of the biggest mistakes is that administrators, they do use local passwords. I mean, for local administrators, they use the same passwords in a whole infrastructure.
Right.
And if you steal the hash of the local admin account, then you own, of course, all of the computers, and then becoming a domain admin, it's just a matter of seconds.
Right. Once they've got, and this is sort of where the security in depth comes into play, this idea of a master password that gives you access to everything, that's the failure. You want to, if they get one account, it's got to be of a limited exposure, you can't have a master key like this.
Of course, completely. So one of the recommendations is always to keep the random passwords for local administrative accounts on the workstations. And that is one of the prevention methods, yes, for the PASTI hash attack.
So, and you're just talking about admins on the individual machines. What about services like Exchange and backup and things like that? Do you want separate accounts for each of those?
Well, technically, it would be great. And then it would be fantastic if you could monitor the service accounts that are technically used for the services to run, because they are not logging on interactively. They are logging on as a service.
Right.
So there is a difference. And if someone steals the password for such service, which is very easy, then this person can interactively log on, or in general log on to other place that the service account should log on.
Well, and isn't there a group policy I could set where you just can't allow accounts to log in interactively? They're service-only accounts?
Yeah, there is, Richard, but the practical usage of it, it's...
Nobody turns it on.
Yeah, exactly. And when someone turns it on, when I'm like seeing that, I'm like so happy. Actually, I was doing a pen test quite recently, and the customer was like very ambitious. Mm-hmm. And that was like promising. And when I was doing the pen test, everything that I saw, I managed to get inside technically, but it's not a bad sign for them. It's just a matter of tiny misconfigurations that were chaining one to each other.
Right.
And this is something that gave me access to be effectively a domain admin. But when I was like browsing their configuration and the way how they have implemented their role-based management to all of the resources and so on, I was so happy because this is actually how it should be done. So I was browsing the infrastructure that is well done. And of course, service accounts were configured to be logging on only to the certain computers.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, they are implementing already the GMSA, Group Managed Service Accounts.
Nice.
So when I was seeing this, I was like, whoa, everything is so new, so well done, so nicely followed. You see all the best practices, and administrators, they're not like, you know, running wild in the infrastructure. They have the scoping. So you have the workstation admin, you've got a server admin, you've got a domain admin, and they are not crossing each other's paths.
Right.
When I saw that, I was like, perfect. But one guy made a mistake.
Oh.
Yeah.
And what was so the mistake was a breach?
The mistake was technically that how to put it? There was a user, and this user, like in a user zone, was working in a server zone.
Oh, I see.
And technically, this user could only log on to this one server, and on this one server, this user was a local administrator.
Right.
So that allowed me to technically grab the hash of the administrator's account on the servers because they had different ones. They had this scoping, different kinds of different passwords in workstations, different passwords in the servers. So, they were not randomized though, which is the best practice to follow. But still, I mean, it's a pretty good step. So, I was able to crawl to the servers.
Because I'm not going to stop you from breaching me at all. I just that once you get in, I don't want you to have access to everything. So sort of limit the harm.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be great. And that's what at the very beginning, getting access to a local administrator's account should be kind of like limiting you to access to the infrastructure. This is what this limit should be about.
Mm-hmm.
You are there, okay, you are a local admin, but not more than that.
Right. And that's as far as you can go.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense. Does that mean that in the future, I mean, we're headed down a path where administrators will have a bunch of different accounts, all with different passwords, with different privilege sets, and they have to switch between them depending on what they're doing?
We are very much in this path right now, actually.
Yeah.
Whenever you've got like these zones, yes, this scoping,
mm-hmm.
administrators, if they're like two administrators, let's say for 200 computers or something like that, they need to work like that. And of course, it's kind of natural for them to obey their own rules because they set them. So why should they like limit themselves? But that is, I would say, more and more seen in more and more companies.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. You don't want a disgruntled employee or one password hash hack
mm-hmm.
to go through the whole system.
Yeah, and if you don't follow the very basic rules, which are quite easy to implement though, then the system is very easily exploitable. And we shouldn't really say it's like vulnerability, it's a hack, like
right.
you were saying. Because it's an architecture thing, yes?
It is sort of inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I got to pay the bills here, Paula. Give me one sec, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. All right, I think the big thing I've gotten from the first half of this show is this idea that you're not going to be able to be stopped. You're impossible. You're always going to break in. So I got to worry about the second tier of defenses as much as the first.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the good design of the architecture, it's always the case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if there should be always someone that can, and is able to look at the infrastructure and the whole architecture thing from the top perspective. And this person is able and to plan what should be the scoping and to understand what is the problem if you move from one scope to another, or what kind of like clean rules should be maintained.
Mm-hmm. So beyond that, do you deal with like, have you run into key problems? I've been contemplating doing a show just on what you should do with your private keys after you get your certs set up, because I've had so many questions in that space. Is it something you've run into doing these pen tests that you suddenly can round up everybody's security keys?
Well, technically, it's a very like not mitigated subject usually in the infrastructure. That really depends how you are using them. Yes, mm-hmm. Because if you are technically putting them on a smart card and you are generating them on a smart card, then you've got also the different kinds of possibilities that whenever you're going to be using them, then they will remain on a smart card.
Yeah.
Of course, when you are using them, yes. Then the question is like how the application is consuming them and where they are copied to eventually, or if they're not, for them to be used, they need to be technically in a memory.
Right.
So, I was showing actually on this, the last year's TED, how to pull the private keys from the memory and how to technically get eventually certificates from the memory, mm-hmm. and how, even though the key was marked as not exportable, how to export it.
Nice.
So things like that are possible.
Yeah, you can still extract it. But you bring up an interesting point with the whole smart card, the RSA numbers. Like, we're doing a lot more two-factor authentication these days. Is that actually helping?
Well, it is and it isn't very. Because whenever we are talking about the pasty hash, it's going to work pretty much the same with the password and with the smart card.
Right.
So the only thing that it kind of helps us is to prevent that kind of like fast spreading. And the reason why I'm saying this is because you can implement the solution that is called authentication assurance mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And you are able to, for example, with the smart card, when you log on with the smart card, you are the member of the administrators group.
Right.
And whenever you log on with the passwords, then you are not.
Okay. So that's interesting. And it's just this idea that you have tiered security. You know, I've done enough Linux to just know the whole sudo concept, this idea that I log in with a normal account, and the only time I want to use an administrator's account, I have to elevate for a task, and then I go back down as soon as that task is completed.
Yeah, exactly. Authentication mechanism assurance is something that is technically not new.
Right.
It's a solution that it has some time already.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's like you have to implement it with the PowerShell. It's not very difficult to implement it in general.
Right.
But using password is so common.
Yeah.
That whenever you feel like, okay, like every time I will need to be an administrator, you need to use the smart card thing. It's kind of like blocking people from really making this decision, because it's again administrator bringing like problems to his own infrastructure,
yeah.
Bringing the difficulties.
That, see, I've been in the situation where I've had developers who are like, we want access to the production servers. I'm like, no, you don't, because then it could be your fault. Like, I got to think at some point, us as IT pros have got to be, I don't want the keys to the castle, because then I could be letting the bad guys in. Just give me the key temporarily so that I can do the one thing I need to do and give it back, and then I'm out. But it's just going to take time for us to start thinking like that.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, these times are coming. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm also very interested how Windows 10 is going to work in such an environment, because we've been also as a team looking at like the pasty hash thing, of course, inside a couple of more things. Let's see how that's going to fit in. Because maybe administrators at some point, we will not technically scope them and limit them so much, because the problem will disappear.
Right.
So which like approach is better? That's why like everybody is like kind of hanging and waiting for that kind of to clear out.
But is there always going to be another exploit? If we fix this pasty hash problem, there's still going to be another exploit. And then, you know, you're back to where you were again. Just because you fixed that doesn't mean you fixed everything. I think the day of the super user's got to end.
Yeah, hope it will not be like that. But let's see. Yeah, of course. I mean, people, the young generation is coming, you know.
Yeah, and the idea that we would, I like this idea. Maybe I'm thinking crazy here, that everybody has a domain user account, and that's all they've got. And then we create assign relationships so that you're able to promote yourself with certain other accounts at certain times. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And I'm just thinking from a hacker's perspective, how much harder is it if I have to have the right pairs of credentials? You need that guy's account and his admin account to be able to get to this one thing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So solutions like that, I mean, it will be great. And though it's not a really like a complex thing to get used to anyway, everybody get used to UAC, which everybody was complaining on. So it's a pretty much the same kind of solution, right?
It is just part of the path going forward. Hey, we started this conversation out just talking about the things you would hope people would already have fixed before you pen test. Are there other things besides just dealing with the pasty hash issue?
Well, of course, many. Like you mentioned, the service configuration. Mm-hmm. Also, like the group policy, good practices to follow. Also, access to data. Like, for example, not really many companies, based on our experience, are making the check, maybe not even the pen test, but more like an audit of permissions on the files on a file server. Because ones sometimes are assigned like ad hoc. And I know that there are different kinds of mechanisms like DAC, DAC, and so on. But still, if you are using the regular permissions, which most of the companies really do, then like, what is the chance that this user is accessing data while he or she shouldn't?
Right. I had a friend of mine who's an IT pro have one of the crypto hacks happen on his system, where they encrypt the ransoming system, where they encrypt the data and then you have to pay to get the key. But he had denied write privileges to most users, including the one it had to set off. You were able to create new files, but you couldn't alter existing files.
Oh, this is great. Yeah.
And it just sort of stopped the whole thing. You know, like said, I can't. Somehow it got through my virus filters and all of these other mechanisms, and it actually went off and it encrypted a couple of files that she was using. And that's it. It couldn't propagate onto the servers because she didn't have the ability to modify existing files.
I was actually laughing last week when I was at the customer site, is that they also had an attack of CryptoLocker. And this was the CBT locker, another like variation of it. Mm-hmm. And normally you say that when someone comes in, you're like, oh, thanks for bringing the sunshine, or oh, thank you for bringing the rain. Yes.
Yep.
You brought it from a different country. So they were laughing that, why have you brought the CBT locker with you? It's like you bring the rain.
Yeah, you brought a different kind of rain. That's
exactly.
Funny.
But what was actually quite good is that the user awareness campaign helped because this particular customer, they have been working on a user awareness a lot. And it's very hard to defend CryptoLocker because it uses a different kinds of mechanism, sometimes very tricky ones.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. Technically, it's a very interesting subject, by the way, because there's a lot of like application control that should be implemented, while in many companies it isn't. But I kind of like hope that the CBT locker shouldn't like or will not come to them. Mm-hmm. But then here it comes, and then they get a problem. But anyway, the user received an email, and the user saw an email, and the user clicked on an email, open attachment, and so on.
Right.
The scope was like very the open attachment, but he did not agree to run the executable.
So he went all the way down the path, but he said no at the right time. He did say, didn't click, 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 click.
Yes, because he said that looked very, like, not good.
Ah. Well, yeah, the problem is we have so many dialogues, we just click through, right? We don't actually watch them anymore. This time he did, and it's sort of saved the day.
Yeah, definitely. And this user had access to a lot of things. So it could be very like deadly for this particular customer.
Right.
And what was very interesting is that I know, as I said before, that they are running the security awareness campaign for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
So people really know what does it mean to have a danger.
Right. So that education worked there, that this person had that reflex at that time. That doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they have been presented different kinds of like spoofing emails and the phishing and this kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, they came into conclusion that normally in the email, you should not have things like that. For example, and in another case, it was that there was an email about someone left you a voicemail on Dropbox. Click here to listen to it.
But if you don't know, you know, yeah. We think it's ridiculous because, you know, why would you do that? But if folks are not in the space, they can get fooled. You know, this is all about phishing now, trying to get people to click on things they shouldn't.
Especially right now when we feel so needed with all the Facebook and Twitter and different kinds of like portals.
Right.
Like when you got this message, you really want to like listen to it. And it's like, someone, I wonder, well, who was that? And in such situation, of course, like if users of employees, technically, if they do know that things like that should not be sent through emails, then they will not open such message. Mm-hmm. So this was actually a pretty good example of how they reacted.
I remember you telling a story a long ago about coming into an office you were going to pen test and then asking the receptionist for a password because you just wanted to prep some stuff before the meeting and ended up utilizing that pen test. Is that, I mean, I guess that has to be defeated by education. She has to have looked at you and said no, or at least give you a guest account that had real restricted access.
Yeah, the problem is very often that the employees at work, they don't kind of, they have not seen the threat before, the real threat before. Nobody really came to them and asked them, and they kind of, or if they did, they did not really feel any kind of consequences.
Right.
So it's a pretty much good decision from the IT department to implement this kind of education program to employees,
mm-hmm.
so that they can, for example, send someone that these employees, they don't know, and then to kind of like trick on them.
Nice.
So give them the USB stick, try to open something, try to ask for some kind of information, work on these guys. And then at the end, you come and then you say, I'm not the person to trust. Why do you trust me?
Yes.
Do you know me really? And then they are like shocked.
Well, I mean, you've seen the same sort of thing with physical security too, where they actually challenge whether or not you'll allow you to follow you through a secure door and the like. Like these practices matter, and it is an angle of vulnerability. Although generally, we still think of hackers as somebody remote. They're somewhere else. You'll never see them. They're nothing as visible as someone right in front of you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's interesting to see how viruses have evolved, that they're a for-profit business now, that it actually is that serious. This is not just kids goofing around. This ransomware is an interesting step.
Yeah, and I mean, the price is actually quite high because of course, there are many different kinds of examples, but the kind of typical price that we are seeing is 500 euros, mm-hmm. $500, about that amount.
Yep.
To access to your data, and technically you cannot be sure if you're going to get access to your data.
Right. Well, and most IT folks I'm saying is like our backup strategy is in place. We just wipe the machines and restore them. There's no consideration about getting the key at all, which sort of speaks to your backup strategies better work.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. Especially right now. Mm-hmm. And what is actually quite interesting is that we have been consulting similar types of customers within the certain time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like very recently. And all of them get hit by the CryptoLocker.
Wow. So it was a whole region got bombed all at once.
Yes, it's very much happening. And for example, if someone says, I want to like target oil companies, here we go. I want to target banks, here we go.
Wow.
Finance related companies, and they find such. So it was a very targeted attack within the industry type.
That's interesting. It's going to happen en masse when it happens.
Yes, and it's a very mass attack. And people are getting more and more ready because they see how painful is that. Mm-hmm. Is that really that they don't even have a backup? They do. They usually do. But it's a, like, it takes your time and it's very, like, stressful because you never know where that's going to spread. And there is always this kind of big question mark because, of course, you could check it before. Of course you could. Yes.
Yes.
But there's always this like, maybe I have not checked for something. So that's why the pentest comes to the field. And it's nice to find out who has access where and what are the typical mistakes.
Absolutely. Hey, we're just about out of time here. You've got a class coming up?
Yes, I do have a class coming up in New York. Mm-hmm. It's a masterclass. It has a title, Hacking and Securing Windows Infrastructure. And what I will deliver during the class, it's technically the experience that we've gained for so many years of doing different kinds of penetration testing for different kinds of customers. And technically, all of the mistakes that the guys are making in infrastructure, we're going to exploit them because that's why this hacking part is there. And also we're going to secure the infrastructure to see why the securing works and that it really works.
Nice.
So it's a workshop and it's a 5 days. It's super focused on hands-on and very much focused on understanding how the security works in the infrastructure.
And what's the dates?
The date is 6th to 10th of April this year, so 2015, mm-hmm. and the class is in the Westin Hotel in New York.
Nice. And is it a whole week, or can you just take a portion of it? How does it work?
Yes. So technically, the training can be divided if you only want to attend the hacking part, mm-hmm. which is 2 days. If you want to attend securing, it's 3 days, of course.
So first you spend 2 days tearing down my systems, and then you spend 3 days showing me how to stop that from happening.
Very much like that. And it's my favorite class, I must tell you.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Paula, it's always a riot to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Thanks.
And good luck on your class. I'm excited to see you do it.
Yeah, hopefully, definitely.
Awesome. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.